I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the Rouse County check sheet for December 4th, 2018, cycle date November 19th through November 30th. Accounts payable checks in the amount of $2,004,128.95. Payroll checks in the amount of $479,829.20. Payroll checks and manuals in the amount of $6,341.50. IRS state income tax wires, $192,156.12, for total disbursements approved of $2,682,455.77.
Second. Items of note, Tom?
Yes, from the accounts payable checks. I have a payment to the Steamboat Springs Chamber Resort Association. This is from our community services budget for the fourth quarter economic development program funding, $14,375. I have a payment also to Colorado Energy Systems, LLC. This is from our Comm Center capital pool, and this is for the installation of batteries at Farwell Comm Center site for the electrical energy service up there, $32,335.20. We have some distribution of our special dedicated mill levies, developmental disabilities mill levy to Horizon Specialized Services in the amount of $11,368.51. These are collections, property tax collections through October 31. Then for our Museum and Heritage Fund, we have payments to Heritage, the Hayden Heritage Center of $279, payment to Historic Rock County, $341. Payment to Hans Peak Area Historical Society of $91.51, and then payment to Tread of Pioneers of $2,027. For some reason, there was not a distribution to the Egeria South Route Historical Society or Oak Creek, so I'm not sure. I didn't call accounting to find out why, but I can do that probably. Maybe I should.
Could be, because we already heard last week that the decrease in the assessed valuation and then the museum.
That could have been it.
Heritage tax, so.
Okay. Yeah. Then also from the Museum and Heritage Fund, we had a reimbursement of from the capacity building fund for the Tread of Pioneers oral history transcripts, $4,963.13. Then we have payments to Inmate Services Corporation. This is for the Sheriff Adult Detention Budget, and this is for extradition of a fellow from Sonoma County Jail in Santa Rosa, California, $984 for that extradition. Payment to Northwest Colorado Health. This is from the County Budget Environmental Health for Public Health. This December 2018 distribution of public health service for public health services, $17,239.57. And we have a payment to the Oak Creek Fire Protection District. It's a wildland fire budget. And this is for the Ball and Pyramid fires, $1,130. We also had a payment from to realauction.com. This is from the Treasurer's Office budget, and this is for the real estate tax lien certificate sold, $4,344 for that auction. Then we have a payment.
So it was the professional services for the auction.
It was professional services for the auction.
Auction site, the online auction.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
So a payment to Slate Communications. This is from Commissioner's Office budget, and this was for staff training on social media and web writing, $9,500. Then payment to Land Title Company. This is from our purchase development rights budget, and a payment of $400,000 for PDR Project 186, the Flanders Ranch, and a payment to Powder River Construction. And this is from the YVRA capital budget, and this is the Terminal Apron Project, Pay App Number 4, for in the amount of $644,587.02.
Any discussion?
I'll just tell you that the land title payment and the Powder River construction payment, those weren't included in that list that I emailed you last week. They were done as out-of-cycle checks just so we can get those payments to them on time.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Do you have items and notes from yesterday's work session? We had a county manager update. That's them for an hour. Legal update we had with our county attorney, had a human resources update, and the emergency management and communications center. We met with our emergency management director as well as the communication manager, and then we also met with the sheriff. So with that, I would move that, are you all right?
Yeah, I can do the motion. Do you have a number?
That's all right. I'll do the consent agendas. So I would move that we approve consent agenda items that are listed on our agenda, consent agenda items A, B, and C, and consent agenda item C is resolution number 2018-078.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Back on. If you want to do this.
Sure.
079.
I guess we don't need a whole bunch of discussion about it. I think I support the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, you do. So, absolutely.
That's the second we're at.
You can read the therefore resolved.
Okay.
The second we're at, tell us why we're doing it. The 175th anniversary of the ratification of the Bill of Rights.
227th anniversary of the ratification of the Bill of Rights. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move to approve resolution number 2018-079, a resolution proclaiming December 15, 2018 as Bill of Rights Day. I would read the final phrase, which is now, therefore, the Rout County Board of County Commissioners hereby proclaim December 15, 2018 of Bill of Rights Days and urge all citizens of Rout County, Colorado to observe Bill of Rights Day in a manner that brings to mind the meaning and importance of each of the 10 articles contained in the Bill of Rights.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you.
No, thank you. Getting it on there. I mean, and really, thank the guy that's out there championing that whole thing. I mean, well, it wasn't for that gentleman there.
Yeah, they've got a pretty robust website, and really, that program is really to get schools engaged in education on the Bill of Rights and other civic lessons.
Absolutely, yeah. Brett, why don't you come on up? We'll start a little bit early with you.
Perfect.
Get you back down, see.
Come on, come on, Julie. Well, come on up.
Come on up. All right.
So, first one we got, we're starting a little bit early here, is the RFQ for the Yampa Valley Regional Airport Toolcat trade-in.
So, consider to waive the formal purchasing process and approve the award and authorization of the chairperson to sign a purchase order for $7,641 for one new 2018 Toolcat S770T4 and the trade-in of one 2017 Toolcat 560 for Yampa Valley Regional Airport using Bobcat's municipal rollover program.
So, any questions
on that?
I just reading through the packet and the information on it. I don't know. It's a great deal. I can't believe that they
give that high of a trade in.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, that, and then the discount, and we get the government discount on it too. I mean,
well, the reason they. At first, we put it on because they were going to do three, but then the other two were so low on hours that they figured they could just do it another year with it and get a pretty good trade-in next year.
Well, that sounds good.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah. Got so nothing to complain about here. Nothing to complain about.
No.
All right.
Wish I had one, yeah.
Really.
I would move that we waive the formal purchasing process and approve the award and authorization of the chairperson to sign. Is that going to be me signing that, or is that going to be electronically signed?
County manager.
So approve the county manager electronic signing of the purchase order for $7,641 for one new 2018 Bobcat S770T4 and the trade-in of one 2017 Bobcat S770T4 for Inver Regional Airport using Bobcat's municipal rollover program.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Very good.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Fred.
Yep. I'm a little early. We can wait if you want.
Gonna go out.
Oh, so we're
getting way too early.
So we're going to have a discussion regarding our second 1110 item, which is the hazard mitigation plan update. And it was a consideration approved and authorized the county manager to electronics to sign a purchase order for the wood environment and infrastructure solutions. Anyhow, so Julie, if you want to start off and have something for the record here.
I would like to request from the commissioners that we table this motion until December 18th.
And for having further consideration, so, or analysis by you and
in the purchasing
and
department,
the emergency management department. So, I would move that we table the approval and consideration of the hazard mitigation plan RFP 610 till December
18th.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Very good.
Thank you.
Should go on. So we have our 1120 item here. We have Kathy Nelson, director. Consideration the Direct Path Master Services Agreement. In consideration to approve and authorize the chair's signature on the Direct Path Master Services Agreement. So, Kathy, can you take off with that?
Okay. So, for your consideration, I have our Direct Path Master Services Agreement. Direct Path is a vendor that we've been using since January 2018. And this Master Services Agreement also includes the Statement of Work. It would be effective January 2018, and moving forward, it would automatically renew.
Unless we had a
change to the
and or a decide not to renew it.
Correct.
What's the notification?
Termination.
Yeah, what's the notification for termination?
I will have to find that for you in here. Because I don't know what that answer is.
Okay, sorry. You can get it from, I'd appreciate it.
Pardon?
If you could just email us or something.
Okay, I will let you know.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve and authorize your signature on the Direct Path Master Services Agreement as presented.
Second. Any discussion? I guess discussion, I'd just make comment. I really think this is a good plan that advocate provide an entity that's educated in this crazy world of medical and somebody that can actually advocate on behalf of our county employees that are participants in the plan and actually advocating for us to keeping the cost down on health insurance and health services on behalf of the county. So I think it's a good deal for $9,370 a year. So any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 So I'm pulling out, I apologize, I didn't have these. I'm pulling out these for signature, and I also need you to initial where our attorneys made some minor edits.
Okay. Oh, this is still on direct path.
Yep.
Next item, which is approval to advance to step four of the HR generalist two pay scale. So, kick off.
Okay, so we recently hired an HR generalist two. She began employment on November 19th at step three of the pay scale, and she has all the minimum requirements to meet being hired at step three, and the county manager has approved that. She is in the process of getting her Society of Human Resource Management certificate for a senior professional HR, and if she obtains that, I would like to advance her to step four since she was already in the process of obtaining that, and if she did obtain it, she would automatically be hired, would have been hired at step four.
So that would be upon completion, not retroactive to her.
That's correct. It would be effective when she attains that.
And then we discussed yesterday, so then this is one of the recommended things that's included in the job description for this position.
That is a desired certificate, that certification that we would like our HR staff to have. It shows that they have a clear understanding of the body of knowledge required or related to performing as an HR professional, and I think that it lends credibility to our department and the caliber of the staff we have carrying out our employee relations and policies. And
does that change that employee's anniversary date?
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't change the anniversary mm-hmm. date.
Okay. But she would then eligible to go to step five at her anniversary.
At her, I get that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what we talked about yesterday. So I would move that we approve the approval of the advancing of the HR generalist 2 to step 4 of the pay scale upon earning a successful SHRM-SCP certification.
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. Okay. One more.
How do we do?
So this is what we're discussing here is Kevin Booth is requesting approval for an employee to be able to carry over 55.26 hours of accrued comp time to be used while this employee is out on medical leave. Typically, comp time for Yampa Valley Regional Airport staff begins is a period starting November 1st and ends on October 31st. Our policy indicates that no comp time can be carried over. It would need your approval, but because this person will be on medical leave and they have limited vacation time, they would like to be able to carry it over so this person can use that extra time while they're out on medical leave.
So I guess the question I have is I can understand why we would not identify this individual because they're talking about medical leave. On the other hand, is it okay to approve this carryover without knowing who it's for? Or I suppose we could just, it would be, if there had been several individuals.
Well, the funny thing is that it would be successful in a CORA request, an open records request. You could ask, anybody could ask who it was for. So I don't know, and maybe, I guess we can provide some direction to Kathy. You know, might be we could just add here, because we're approving it site person specific, we could ask for just even the employee number to be in there.
Just kind of curious, because let's say Kevin had brought forward three or four individuals.
We approved two.
We would have approved the slate as
you're right, though. If it wasn't for the medical issue, you know, which is protected information, you know, we could report that to you, but we could give it to you out the side.
Okay.
And then I would suggest, don't even need a list of names, we can just employee number, 1640, whatever.
We can share that somebody is out on medical leave. We just cannot share specifically why they're out on medical leave.
Okay.
So for the purposes of today, Mr. Chairman, I would move to approve the carryover of accrued compensatory time for the employee from the Yampa Valley Regional Airport as presented.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. 20 minutes here, so whatever. Run into lunch hour, but anyhow. So we're here with the finance department, and as well as our auditor, with Michael Jenkins, with McMahon and Associates LLC. So Dan, Mike, whoever wants to lead off here.
Your show.
Tag. Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to meet with you and to present the results of our audit of the county's financial statements for the 2017 fiscal year. You guys have sat through our routine before, so we've had the audit 101 primer in the past. But just to reiterate, our responsibility is to provide an opinion on the financial statements and basically to opine on the presentation relative to GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles for governmental entities. The ideal for our audit is to present a clean or unqualified opinion on the county's financial statements and the single audit. Pleased to announce that the county did receive an unmodified clean opinion for 2017, which is the highest level of assurance that we as independent auditors can provide on the financial statements and the single audit. So kudos to the counties for that. Dan and staff have gone through, the financial results for 2017 already, but I just did want to kind of hit a few highlights, and I'll go through every one of the 89 pages or whatever that's in there. Just picking out a couple of highlights. As you know, the financial statements present both a full accrual government-wide presentation, which is similar to what you see in the for-profit world, as well as the fund financial statements, which is a budgetary basis, which you're more accustomed to seeing on a regular basis. So two viewpoints on the financial statements, two views of the financial statements, not two sets of books. County does have a strong asset base. Looking at a government-wide level, county's total assets at the end of 2017 grew about $6 million to $233 million. Cash and investments comprised about were up about $4 million over the past year. County is highly liquid. Of that $233 million in total assets, about $43 million, let's call it, is cash and investments, so pretty liquid. Another big part of the assets, however, as is typical with governments, is going to be your capital assets. So in terms of the liability side of the statement of position, the county has one issue of certificates of participation outstanding and three revenue notes outstanding at the end of the year, which declined about $1 million in the past year due to scheduled repayments. The difference between assets and liabilities is called net position in county terms, but really that's the county's equity. That increased about $5.8 million, or 3%, in 2017. $4.7 million of that increase came from governmental activities, the day-to-day operations of the government, and the remaining about $1 million came from business-type activities. So that's the airport, building department, and the water and sewer authorities. Excuse me. The equity, the difference between the assets and the liabilities, as I mentioned earlier, primarily represents the net equity in capital assets. It's about $157 million of the $199 million. That's about 80%, give or take. And about $38 million is unrestricted and available for operations in the current 2018 fiscal year. Looking at the governmental funds and the budgetary financials, pretty solid governmental fund balances. One metric that we typically look at to kind of gauge how we do in terms of fund balances, do we have enough financial strength there, is to look at ending fund balances relative to the past year's total expenditures. And across all governmental funds, the county's fund balances represented about 52% of total 2017 expenditures. That's down slightly from about 54%, but still in good framework in terms of having the reserves there to kind of tide us through the ups and downs of of an entity where you're reliant on property and sales tax. So you've got some variability there. In aggregate, the total fund balances declined about $1.7 million. The governmental funds did during 2017. Largely that's driven by a $2.8 million decrease in the road and bridge fund due to budgeted expenditures on infrastructure and maintenance of the county's roads. In addition to that, there's also a $6 million budgeted transfer from the general fund over to the equipment pool that funds the county's capital and infrastructure investments, including this past year. I believe there was a significant funding of the combined law enforcement facility to the tune of $3 million, I think, was last year. In aggregate and on a fund level, the major fund expenditures were all within budgeted and adopted budgets. So again, that's just shows the county's commitment to kind of living within their means within the fiscal year. Your packet includes, in addition to the The audit itself includes our letter to you as the governing board that addresses kind of the softer sides of the non-numeric sides of the audit. So it talks about the accounting policies, the nature of the accounting policies adopted and implemented by the county, any issues or disagreements we had with management, there were none. In addition to that, advises you of some upcoming financial reporting standards, which is always an attention grabber, and talks about some recommendations we have relative to the county's business practices and some opportunities for improving those. There are a number of them that are carryovers from the 2016 audit. That largely reflects just the timing of when we were able to kind of get in and do our work and be able to follow up with the county departments, as well as the county's pretty significant investment, both financially and manpower-wise, in the systems transition that is ongoing here in the past year. It is important to note that there were, I believe, at least two of the 2016 comments that did drop off the board. So there is those are getting addressed, and we're pretty confident that that history will repeat itself and that those will, over time, be resolved. None of them are what I classify as being earth-shattering in terms of a total evolution of controls. So I think certainly that's something to be take some comfort in. I also think that, you know, that the county's finances certainly are in good hands in terms of the work that Dan and Randa and their staff are doing, both internally with the reporting, in terms of managing the software transition, and really kind of working with the departments to address their reporting needs, and also ensuring that kind of the business practices of the county are the best possible. I guess to wrap up, I'd just like to thank Dan and Randa and all the finance staff and Tom and really all the county departments for their assistance and for putting up with us during the audit. You know, it is a cooperative process in terms of we do spend time out at the departments, you know, going through, trying to understand how they're involved, how their operations impact the reporting process, and really they're you know, they're very receptive to the process, and they're very involved in it, and it's, I think, something that the county should be commended for. So thank you.
Thank you guys, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a couple questions.
Sure.
Start off with. So, again, the changes to GAAP, I mean, always kills me every year. Come up with more. And who dreams up this stuff?
I don't know.
And for
they're not
is that you?
They're not on my Christmas card list.
For what?
Me.
Yeah, you know, it's really, and you know, so, you know, most recommendations should be for problems existing. I just did, and again, it seems to me, since my being in government accounting and the rest, it seems like some of these things are just dreamed up to, I don't know, they're kind of frustrating. So what are the changes coming up? And what page are you on?
I'm looking at page 2 of the letter. And it's just the third of the way down the page there. So next page. So here.
So it's page 7.
Yeah.
No,
okay. Okay.
Good
yep.
job. Yeah. So anyhow, yeah,
so
elaborate
got,
on that.
We've got
so.
Two. One is relating to how the county's accounting for its agency funds. Really not.
And what are agency? What is the description of agency funds?
Agency funds are where the county is holding money on behalf of other parties. So currently, if we pop open some of your financial statements, you've got. Far enough.
That's all right. You can do
the back one.
You know, it's basically, we collect all the money for the school districts, library districts, and all that
stuff. So the treasury stuff,
yeah. That's basically the agency funds. Yeah.
So we probably do have some agency funds in, well, I guess maybe they're not even that. So, I mean, when we do some planning, fee in lieu, and those kind of things,
That's not in the, yeah, those sit in the general fund and that kind of thing, but these agency funds, it's basically the property taxes that we collect for various other districts and stuff like that.
Okay, so anyhow, so go back and tell us what we're going to do different. That's,
you know, not, I put this out there just to make sure that, you know,
well, that's
you're,
good.
You're
I appreciate
aware
the conversation,
of it, but
so,
it's
yeah,
not,
we want to be aware
it's
of
not
it.
Going to really represent a substantive change that you're going to see of, oh my goodness, or, yeah, it's like nuances of we'll have to show the ads.
As we'll have to present them as custodial funds. It says that right there.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, the name has changed, and then we got a few other changes as well.
So, I mean, it's only going to be at year end anyhow. It's what's in essence what we collected in December that we just haven't got shipped out yet.
The numbers aren't going to – the number part of it isn't – it's the presentation
of it.
It's the word part that's going to change.
Okay. We're, it's not we're changing the paint, the wheels, the trim, but the engine is the same.
Yeah. Okay.
The interior
still
is
drives
the same.
Just as fast.
Exactly.
Slow as what
it is. Gas consumption will not vary.
Okay.
So that's one aspect of it. And the other part of it is tweaking the accounting for leases. And that's going to take place in the 2020 fiscal year, so we got a little bit of time to prepare for that. Again, this is one of those things that sounds great in theory, but in practice is just weird. I'm sorry, that's a professional accounting term. Just in terms of, there's, previously on the government-wide financial statements, you would recognize a capital asset or a capital lease if you had, you know, in essence, you look at the lease and you say, you know, any normal person looking at this would say, we basically, you know, disregard the legalese, we for all intents and purposes own that asset. So we would set it up as an asset and depreciate it, and we would set, just like we have every other owned asset, we would set up a liability, and the liability for the lease, and as the lease gets paid off over the term, you know, that liability declines, we're depreciating assets. So just like every other financed asset. GASB and all their wisdom decided that all leases basically greater than 1 year should be considered to be accounted for in a somewhat similar way. So they're going to have governments pick up that liability and then create deferred inflows and outflows relating to this. So basically confusing matters.
To the common person, yes.
Yes.
And that's not even that common.
Yeah. So it's going to have a government-wide impact on a budgetary level.
Well, that's the problem with some of these things anyhow, because you can't compare 2016 to 17 because you changed the rules and the reporting of it during the time. So,
so it's something that you would probably, you're going to see at the government-wide level, but that's not something that governments will see and managers will see on an interim basis, typically, so because it doesn't affect your budgetary accounting. So, again, it's one of these... I'm sorry.
Well, I apologize.
It,
I apologize
for asking
this
guy
you. I just, it's so, one of those things every year, you know, they have a little bit of thing, and so I don't just... No, wondering who's
thank
driving this
asking.
Situation.
I don't know, but
like,
yeah. Really. Happy to change drivers.
So then, yes. And then again, in the so for clarification's sake, then so the report and also includes the report that our department did. The page of the management discussion and analysis is all stuff that's created by internally.
Well, this entire report, with the exception of our opinions, is created internally by Dan Randa and the staff. So this is the county's report. And I wouldn't, that's a really good point, is that the MD&A is really as readable as financial statements get in terms of explaining what's in there, what happened in the county, what's the context for the county's operations, how do we do relative to budget, big picture, how do we do, where are we at, what are our plans going forward. And really, I think if somebody's looking to see, hey, what was the county all about in 2017, I'd certainly recommend that as a good place to start in terms of taking an idea or getting a really good idea of where the county has been in the past year and kind of where the county anticipates it's going to go forward. So yeah, that's and it's much more readable format, I think, than all the numbers and, you know, the notes. I mean, we're obligated to present in that way, but I think this certainly conveys information that is more approachable to the layperson.
So anything you want to talk about or anything?
No.
So I guess the...
Pretty happy to see the clean audit.
Well, especially, I agree. And, you know, we'd be disappointed if we had one, but, you know, so... And again, I guess, like you said, thanks to everybody, including department heads, the employees, and specifically the finance department for... county department for having a good report. So I guess the other thing, we filed for an extension request. Mm-hmm. So after we approve this thing today, then we'll be shipping this thing off. Or we actually approved.
We already shipped it off.
It doesn't matter what we...
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for asking.
September. So this is a formality.
Okay. Because I thought we usually accept the audit or whatever.
Yes, we do. But I mean, as far as like what we had to do with the state, we had to send that in by September 30th. So
are you looking for a motion to accept the audit as presented?
Yeah, and other than we still have a few minutes here. So I guess do we want to have another session, you know, to talk about the responses of the recommendation letter?
Letter of government.
Yeah. Or do we want to have that work session or something? Or I think they're about the same thing as what we've seen in the past for the most part. And specifically when we talk about the fair and the rest, and we have continued
reconciling
struggles of a number of people and control and all those things that we understand and recognize, and still trying to have a responsible method to get monies from. Especially cash monies from people's hands into our bank, mm-hmm. which we have control of. So I don't know that we need to do that today. I'm all right.
And certainly what Dan Weinheimer and I can do is communicate with the departments that have these fixes that are needed and get them to do that as they come up and report to you. Or help them get them to come up and report to you how they're going to fix it.
Yeah. We recognize the recommendations.
Yeah.
So, having said that, Mr. Chairman, I would move to accept the auditor's report as presented.
And I'll second that. Any further discussion? Again, thanks to everybody involved in having a good, clean audit and having it presented, especially through the concept of the ERP as well. So,
just wanted to say, you know, this is we had no audit adjustments again. So this is our 30th year of no audit adjustments. So.
We try.
Just saying.
Yeah, I know. You guys definitely try. Yeah.
Look for them.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Well, very good. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks very much.
Take it easy.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to start off with our 1 o'clock item, joint funding agreement between Rock County and USGS. Scott?
Okay, so yeah, the first part of this environmental health update, we'll talk about water quality and specifically the monitoring program with the USGS and other local funding partners. And then we can talk a little bit about air quality and the air monitor and some of the things that are going on there. And I was just going to give a short demonstration on how to use this. This is all publicly available through the internet. And so we'll talk about that once we're done talking about this annual agreement with the USGS.
Okay.
So... the 2019 request includes not just annual increases, but also costs for monitoring of two additional parameters. So we meet at least annually with the funding partners and the USGS, talk about the program, talk about areas where we might want to improve the program, or take advice from the USGS on how to improve the program. And at the last meeting, they said that it would be a good idea to monitor for turbidity, or water clarity, which is basically just a measure or an indication of the amount of suspended sediment in the stream, and then also for algae. And we know from the existing data that we've seen nutrients slowly increase over time. We also have seen...
So how do we know that? I mean, I can understand this monitoring. How do we know that it's increasing?
Because of the data that we've collected. So we can go back and look at the data.
So why are we going to pay for more studies to something we're already getting?
So we're not going to study for more nutrients, which is where we've seen the increase.
Okay.
We're going to look at turbidity, water clarity. And so we know... if we have suspended sediment versus dissolved sediment.
Our current testing regime then includes the testing for the nutrients.
That's correct, but not turbidity.
Okay, and then that test has shown that the nutrients levels are increasing.
Yes.
Since we started the monitoring program.
That's correct.
Okay, good.
And so we also, or they also suggested monitoring for algae. That's just at two locations. I think they said one time per year. The details are in here. But we want to. We know that White River's had problems with algae. And so what we're trying to do is kind of stay ahead of that.
Is that related to temperature or nutrients or both?
The problem is they haven't collected data, so they don't know.
Okay.
And so that's part of the reason we want to collect information so we can, you know, hopefully find the source of the problem or... you know, try to stay ahead of the curve if those problems start to occur. And so if your nutrients are increasing, temperature is increasing, I think you become a little bit more susceptible. And when we've talked to experts at the USGS and the CPW, it seems like that these problems are not being caused by just one thing. Kind of look at it as a pie chart, a lot of different pieces of the pie. A lot of different factors and different, you know, different sizes of the pie. And so what we don't know is, you know, exactly what's factoring the most and what all the factors are.
So the study never projected that it was going to identify causes. It was to see trends.
That's right. And then it kind of gives you some direction about where to look further.
Yeah.
And there is, as you know, this nutrient study that's going on in the Upper Yampa. And so this is sort of connected to some of that. And just to try to figure out, just understand nutrients and potential problems and some of the algae problems that they're experiencing in Stagecoach. And so there's temperature, there's geology, there's land use. I mean, there's all kinds of different things that can influence these factors.
Can you envision some other parameters that if there was more money available that we might hear about wanting to collect data on through this program?
You know, that's a great question for the group in the USGS, and that's kind of part of the reason we get together. And that's the question that we asked, you know, this year when we had the meeting, and this is what they came back with. So, and then all the funding partners. No, we don't. We don't really take minutes.
So somebody
it's pretty
ought to
informal.
Minutes.
So
or
take
either
notes.
Minutes or notes and yeah. Pass them on to us, the rest of us that aren't coming and aren't going so that we kind of stay involved in it. And again, I'm not going to have a problem with what you're asking for,
yeah.
Scott. And I'm totally supportive of all that, of that concept. In fact, that's, I was told when we started this thing, and I think it continues to be a great thing. But I guess the other thing, and you know, we've discussed this in the past too, whether it's last year or the year before, it's great having all this data, but you got to have a rocket scientist to come help for analyze it for you to come up with some reporting things.
So if you remember, we demonstrated the website that the USGS has.
Right.
And it has some pretty good tools for the layman to kind of look at the data and look at some of the trends. Certainly you're right, you know, when you want to dig in and do statistical analysis and if those numbers are meaningful, that takes a more in-depth, you know, that's a more in-depth job. But those tools on the USGS, and I'm happy to provide those links again, are pretty good for people to see, you know, kind
see,
of
because I didn't know
data.
That we were raising nutrients. I mean, and then when you say raising nutrients. Is that in a 2% raise, or is that in a 10% raise, or is that
small? It's increasing a little bit.
Huh.
Yeah, so it's not a big spike. And you can see that on the data if you go on the USGS page.
Over the last 10 years, whatever years.
Since we started monitoring.
Yeah.
Well, that was the purpose of the monitoring.
That's right.
Understanding baselines and seeing changes. Yeah, I'm totally supportive of the program, too. I mean, from our perspective, it seems like a small price to pay to do what we can to ensure the health of the rivers.
And I think it's a pretty good deal. We're leveraging money from the USGS. They weren't able to increase their contribution this year, so the increase in costs was spread to our funding partners. And then the increases in cost associated with turbidity and algae were also dispersed among the funding partners. All of the funding partners agreed to the increase.
Do they physically have to go add something to what they have there, or is it a...
It's a one-time. They go out.
And that's where they just pull the water. It's just more tests.
So. Yeah. And so if you're taking turbidity, not only can you tell if there's a trend over time, but you can also understand the dissolved portion versus the suspended portion. And so it makes the data that we're collecting more meaningful. So maybe we had a lot of high nutrients, high metals, but then we find out we had high turbidity. So that means that, you know, it was during runoff, there was more sediment going into the water, and so it makes that data more meaningful.
Right.
So
I don't know, this whole thing, the reason why I kind of bring up something, it still would be nice to get some annual or five-year report, you know, for this, and, you know, just a snapshot, just like we do with the auditor, you know, just to come in and say,
this is where we were five years ago,
and this is where we're at today, and recognizing and documenting.
Well, they've got that data set, but what does it mean?
Yeah, or who do we get? Who could write something like that?
So you recall that the last report came out in 2012, and we had that conversation about, well, how often do we need a report?
Right.
And I think that they said it's something that you might want to look at after about 10 years.
Okay.
So I guess in 2021, 2022, or in these annual meetings, we'll start talking about that.
And then it'll be a question, how much are you willing to pay for it?
No,
Well, I think it was grant-funded last time.
Oh, really?
They got grant money to do that, and I assume that we would probably try to get some funding assistance to do that.
Well, anyhow, I could keep it on your list.
Yeah.
And
having good data provides better justification. Like, we have a need. Here's the data. This is the trend we're seeing. You know, we want to understand it better. So it seems like it's a better justification for it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in our public could fault us for being part, any one of us for being part of this program. So,
can you make the motion? My computer just died.
Oh,
terrible battery power.
So I would move that we approve and
sign
the agreement between Rock County and the USGS regarding the fiscal the support and the fiscal. We're actually the fiscal agent on the partnership that and collect the money from the rest of them. So, anyhow, I move that we approve and authorize my signature on that contract.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 This was fully charged.
It asks all three signatures. I don't know why. I think your signature is fine. So signature, name, and then title.
So it's been unplugged since 10:30, but I haven't even been doing anything. So
maybe you just got to call one with a bad battery.
Yeah, I might ask Helen.
So wait, we're not done.
I'm just going to go put this away.
Okay.
Plug it in.
It's already lost a bigger part of the brain, so...
Yeah, if they want all three, tell them we need the president's signature on this, on theirs.
Right? Yeah, I don't know. We're going to need more signatures, please. You don't believe it.
President?
Plug in?
That's all right. I can do it on this computer.
Plug in charger?
Yeah, but I don't want to crawl under my desk to unplug it.
Oh, okay.
And just for looking at the agenda, this one works just as well.
I have the one that does it hooks up to your big monitor, and then the portable.
Oh, the extra one, yeah. Yeah, I've got, no, I leave that one at home.
Okay, mine's at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
All right, so the last couple of summers, as everyone has noticed, we've had a lot more smoke from wildfires. So it seems like the frequency of those events has increased. And we've also seen an increase in calls to our department, kind of wondering, hey, at what point do we cancel soccer practice? Or, you know, sensitive people who are sensitive to it asking, you know, where's the information for me to understand this better? And, you know, what level of activity should I be having outside, you know, given everyone's different health conditions? And so we've seen a lot of other counties and really people all over the world starting to install these monitors. The technology's gotten a lot better, and it's gotten a lot cheaper. And so we were able to buy this air quality monitor for $250.
Wow.
And so it seemed like, to me, it was a no-brainer given the you know, amount of calls and interest and everything, and for the price. We also...
Is it just a particulate matter?
Well, yeah, it's particulate matter, and we'll get to that.
Okay. But,
and it's site-specific, too.
That's right.
There's only one in the county.
There's only one in Rock County right now.
Right.
And I installed it, or I had the guys from the facilities install it on that little shed in the parking lot. And so it's under the eave, so it protects it from snow and water and, you know, precipitation.
Huh.
And then it also, it needs to stay out of the sun. The one problem that we've had, which I didn't really anticipate.
Was when the generator kicks on, huh?
Yeah. So the temperature isn't always accurate when it gets really cold. And so we might move it. I think we can put it on one of these light poles out here and build like a little birdhouse over it. And then we won't have that problem with the generator kicking on. But it only affects temperature. It doesn't affect the
particulate matter.
And it just does the one particulate matter, 2.5?
It does PM10, PM2.5, and PM1.
Wow.
And so I'll show you that.
Yep.
So, you know, before, the best tool we had really was sight distance. And so this is something that we have up on our bulletin board. We've put in a bulletin board with all kinds of information for the public, so you should come down and check it out sometime. But basically what I did is I took Steamboat Springs and GIS, and I put one-mile rings around the county building. And so you can correlate the sight distance to an air quality index category. And so, you know, that was kind of the best tool we have. Now we have some real data. That's another tool. So we can take these things together and have a much better idea of what the air quality is. And then we also found a resource. I think this is from Montana in Missoula. Missoula has a lot of air quality problems because they sit in this little basin and terrible inversions. And, but it gives people, we put this on our website too, it gives people a better idea of the amount of physical activity that they can have at different air quality levels. So people now have, you know, I think adequate tools for this area to kind of figure this out. And so we've been trying to get the word out. We had a nice article in the paper, put it in the route and about. And so far so good. People have been, it's been well received. People have been pretty happy that there's some extra information. Talked to a couple of the superintendents and the athletic director, so it's on their radar, and now they have some better tools for when we start to have those conditions. And I suspect that, you know, we'll see some higher particulate matter readings when we have these temperature inversions, but it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. And then certainly we missed the wildfire season this year, but the next fire that we have, you know, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that and see where we're at.
So this thing here that you're creating, is that going to be for Rock County, or you'll have one of these just like this?
So
that's a universal.
So this is a universal description. And we cooperated with Summit County on a grant to get three more monitors. So we're going to put one monitor up in North Route, hopefully at the school. It seems like a school is a perfect place to do it because not only do you have a high population, a sensitive population, you also could potentially tie it into some of their curriculum. And these are the criteria pollutants, and this is, you know, the same thing that they do with water quality. So we try to put it at the school in North Route. Probably have to put it at the city building in Hayden, and I've already talked to the Hayden city manager about it since the schools are going to be under construction.
Down, yeah.
And then we'll put another one in South Route, maybe at the elementary school, maybe at the high school. We'll figure out, you know, where the best place to do that is. And so then we'll have four monitors, and I think we'll cover the county pretty well. And it's a good tour.
Is this
your water?
This is on our website, and it was developed by in Montana. Montana Department of Environmental Quality. So that's where we got it. Because I was looking for some reference, and this was the best reference that I could find. So, you can go to purpleair.com. That's where this map is. And then you can, over here, you can zoom in on your area.
So do you have, so I guess that would be a good thing to probably put on your environmental health website. Then would be a question.
Well, there's a link on his environmental health website directly to our monitor.
Oh, okay, that's what I was saying then. It's already there then.
Good. Yeah, there, yeah.
Good.
And so you can see here in Northwest Colorado how we had a big gap, no data, and now we have our monitor here. And so right now it's set on US EPA PM 2.5 air quality index. If you hover over here, these are all the kind of data, types of data that it collects. So humidity, temperature, and raw PM, you know, raw particulate matter data. And so whatever you choose, that's the information that it'll show. It defaults to the PM 2.5 air quality index data. And then if you hover over the point, it will show you what the data has been in the last few days. And so you can see that we spend a great majority of our time down here in the green. And if you hover over the green down here, I don't know if you can see it, it says air quality is considered satisfactory and air pollution poses little or no risk.
It's so interesting to see that spike.
We do see some spikes over the weekend. And the spikes that I've seen are very, very short duration. So maybe the wind kicks up.
Somebody's smoking
a cigarette.
That's the other problem you've got out there. A lot of our employees, that's where they go and smoke.
So, and then you can zoom in to more specific data. There's two sensors, and you see sometimes, and it seems to be one of them in particular, gets out of whack a little bit. So you know the data is less reliable when the blue line doesn't agree. But looking at the trend, I'm guessing that purple line probably isn't accurate. So anyway, I just encourage you to go in here and play around with it and spread the word. And I think it's a pretty good tool. And pretty soon we're going to have three more covering all parts of the county. And they're $250. So hopefully we'll see how long it lasts. But it's not, it doesn't break the bank to have to replace a monitor.
So even right now out there in California, I'm looking at the bigger map. It's still, you know, in those really, well, not super high ranges, but in the high ranges, they still have that much smoke floating around out there from the fires, presumably.
That could be.
Or that could just be air pollution.
It could be air pollution. And then you also go to the individual point and look at the data, and you might see that, all right, this doesn't look quite right. You can kind of tell when they're working or when they're not working.
But, I mean, it's clear that there's pretty good concentration of those darker colors there in California.
But, you know, I think that purple color is pretty much like don't go outside.
Oh.
And so I'm not sure I believe it. I'd have to go in. Okay. I'd have to zoom in and look at it. And so there, you got to kind of be able to look at it, and you get an indication of how reliable the information is.
And you, the default is the 2.5 because that's certainly the one that is more health risk for people.
Right, that's the one that's tied most closely to health concerns is PM2.5. And, you know, we take PM10 data off the roof. That data is more accurate.
Because that's where you actually have the filters that you send in for.
Yeah.
Do you send those somewhere for... Or do you measure those yourself?
Nope. We send them in, they weigh them,
okay.
And then there's an air quality report every year. We've never come close to exceeding our standards for PM10. So at some point I'm wondering, you know, do we need to talk to the state? Okay, we have these other monitors here. They're not as accurate, we haven't exceeded the limitation in 20 years.
So we're still getting CMAQ money for
them. But we're getting $4,300 a year to support that program. And
it
doesn't quite pay for itself, but based on the hours.
But wouldn't it be nice to take that $4,300 and buy, 12 or 16 of these other monitors?
Maybe. But, I think that we'll see what happens, but, it's something that's kind of in the back of my mind to talk about.
You said that piece of paper right there was on the website?
Yes. I'm pretty sure it is.
So it's a stupid question, but the 2.5 is 2.5, and the 10 is 10.0?
Yes. Yeah.
So the 10 is much bigger.
10 is
four times
larger.
Four times bigger than the 2.5.
That's right. And I guess, your respiratory system is pretty good at kind of filtering out or dealing with those larger particles, but those smaller ones, I guess, are more likely to become embedded in lung tissue and start to cause health issues.
Am I getting close?
Activity guidelines for wildfire incident. So that's it?
Activity. Oh, okay, great. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
Let's see, we got a few more minutes. PBERG, we're still on track for replacing our liners. I've talked to Kathy Nelson about bringing somebody else on as a backup operator and an on-call operator. One thing that Scott Smith struggles with.
Scott is an employee of ours.
That's right. That's correct.
So he hadn't been contract for a long time.
That's right.
We had changed him into an employee.
Okay, right. You're right. And so when the alarm goes off and it sends out a call, it can happen at 2 in the morning, it takes Scott 2 hours to get to the site. And it also costs the community money to pay for that time, the mileage, and so forth. And it's also it's kind of wearing on Scott to have those situations.
Well, he's got a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
He does.
He doesn't feel like he can go out of town. And I'm back up and I have some of the certifications. But really, it would be nice to have somebody closer to Phippsburg to be able to come in and deal with whatever problem that's happening in a short time frame. And so the idea is that we bring somebody on. We've identified 3 people already that are interested, 2 people in PBERG, 1 in Oak Creek. And we start the process of getting them trained. I think it's a good idea to have a succession plan in case Scott doesn't want to do it or he wants to do something else. Get somebody lined up who can do that. And then also to deal with some of these on-call situations where they can run down there in 5 minutes and see what the problem is. Usually it's not serious. Maybe the pumps shut off and they made the alarm go off. And, Scott's sitting in bed at 2 o'clock in the morning wondering if it's important enough to have to drive the 2 hours in and then the 2 hours back.
So any opportunity? I mean, we just sat down with Jason with the communication and, the remote sensor stuff that he got put onto the
Farwell Mountain. Really awesome.
For the communication system for the tower and everything, and the batteries and the charger and the wind turbine and all that stuff. So is there anything that we can add to that thing to help him in that manner to be a little more into the 21st century and more electronic than the rest that he can dial up on his computer at home or something?
Well, it's a pretty advanced system.
So anyhow, you don't need to answer my question.
When there's an alarm,
keep in mind,
he gets a phone call on his cell phone.
Yeah, I know. So, but
he's talking about you getting an alarm that tells you something's wrong, but you have no idea what's wrong.
But he's really got to drive out there to see what it is that's wrong, versus being able to have some electronic things
I'll guarantee you, it was like when I went on that rig tour a couple of years ago. The young guy with a cell phone saying, he says, "Yep, he can run the entire well site and the pumping operations from his cell phone." He said, "I can be in Africa and I can run this site."
I don't disagree with your direction that you're heading, but anyhow, we ought to keep that in mind too. I mean, now we have internet down there and, you know, have the ability to have some of that stuff. So keep that in mind too. So who do you have? You have a couple, three people. You don't need to tell me.
We have three people identified. You know, we'll fly the position. We'll have to come back and talk to you guys about getting it approved. The idea is to... We don't want to spend more money. We want to either spend less money or keep it even.
Split up between.
Yeah, because we're going to be paying somebody less money and less time to be doing some of these things. And so that's just something we have to keep an eye on. We want to be able to control costs. We don't want to bring on a new... Well, we do want to bring on a new FTE or one half of an FTE at some point.
The other one.
But reduce part of the other one.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the idea. We had to replace the pitless adapter in the drinking water system, and so that is out where the infiltration gallery is. And we had one of the pipes was corroded, had a bunch of holes in it. It didn't have any, I can't remember what you call it. You hook up an anode and
cathodic protection. Thank you. Oh,
look at you guys. I went to talk to those guys about it yesterday. So,
so it didn't have any cathodic protection, and the wear on the pipe is bizarre. It had these round holes in it.
I know how that is on my water system at home, too, yes.
Yeah. So we replaced that, and then we're also still in the process of updating our overage rates and doing another update to the rules and regs, which kind of got put on the back burner once we were trying to figure out Munis, and so that's coming to the overage fees haven't changed since the system started, and so we're just trying to get things updated, and so it's a constant.
So the watershed group is having the study on that's been, you're participating in on the study on Stagecoach Reservoir and the rest. So and it, are we contributing to that? Is that included in your budget?
It is included in the budget. I put $5,000, and I think I marked it as like a watershed.
I don't remember. I know you met with us. I didn't remember whether we had talked about it and whether we approved that. When you met with us, that we had approved that $5,000.
Well, I think I'm going to have to come back to actually get it approved.
Okay.
I didn't know what the amount was going to be before. As it turns out, it is going to be $5,000 based on the grant from the roundtable.
Roundtable, yes.
But it's in your budget.
But it's in the budget.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's just, I just put it in there as a general watershed improvement placeholder, basically.
That's fine. Again, then.
And, the watershed group is a little, doesn't seem to be really solid right now. They did
get
this.
Must have good attendance. I mean, oh, you don't.
Not lately. Not since that last effort was completed on the watershed health
report. That report that we got.
And so the next thing has been that nutrient study. And Upper Yampa is the financial agent for that.
Fiscal agent. Yeah.
Or the fiscal agent. So I don't know. I don't know what the future looks like for that group really at this point. But this project seems to be getting off the ground, and then we'll see where it goes from there. And there was talk about, you know, does this group act as a technical group to Friends of the Yampa and the Roundtable? Friends of the Yampa asked if maybe those two groups should combine, and so there's, you know, different opinions, and But Lynn Halliday is basically the one that's sort of keeping that afloat and scheduling meetings and so forth.
I got the meeting notice on it, and I asked Lynn, I said, so forward me over the minutes. I want to keep abreast of what you guys are doing here, you know, and just know what's going on. So
I get them, so I can forward it to you. I don't always go to the meetings because she scheduled them the same time as the YBSC meeting. Sometimes I have to go to that YBSC meeting.
Uh-huh.
Exactly the same time every month. Mm-hmm. Yep. Anyway.
Very good.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
See ya.
Well, I don't know if our search and rescue people are coming. Mm-hmm.
Scare them all? They got lost.
They didn't know it. I guess we should.
Here, we're here live.
Okay, typically what we do is just kind of read through the first few pages.
So that's fine. So I guess we'll do an intro here in case anybody's calling in from listening in on the phone site. So
Anyhow, we're here to have our official 2019 budget overview hearing. So, Dan, take off. Yep.
Okay. 2019 Round County budget projects $67.5 million in revenues and $75.4 million in expenses, resulting in 7.96% of expenses over revenues. And after removing $524,000 of non-cash expenses such as depreciation, the use of reserves is $7.4 million. The 2019 budget as compared to the 2018 budget includes $11.1 million or 20% increase in revenues and a $14.4 million or 23% increase in expenses. The 2019 budget is separated into governmental activities and business type activities as follows. Governmental activities include the county's basic services such as property tax, administration, public safety, human services, community services, road and bridge, and administration. Revenues are anticipated to increase $1.4 million or 3% to $46 million. Expenses are anticipated to increase $3.8 million or 8% to $52.7 million and result in expenses over revenues of $6.7 million. The decrease in reserves is primarily the result of funding $4.0 million of the $7.5 million combined law enforcement facility, the $1.1 million relocation of the E911 Communication Center to the CLEF, and $2.1 million for the planned replacement of capital and infrastructure. The decrease in reserves is offset by the $0.5 million reserve increase in the health insurance pool to adequately fund health insurance claims or provide a competitive benefit and provide a competitive benefit for staff. Ask questions, I guess, right, whenever we would like to.
Sure, okay? Just interrupting.
Yeah, that's okay.
So I'll interrupt you right away. On the CLEF,
That
$7.5 million is offset by approximately $1 million of income that we booked last year, or this year, in 2018, for the sale of the property.
Yeah.
So the actual ending cost of the CLEF for us would be more closer to $6.5 million.
And then we also got $400,000 from the grant, so it's approximately $6.1 million net cost.
Net cost for the CLEF. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Which was built out of reserves and surplus revenues.
$6.1 from favorable budget variances from reserves, from revenues and expenses over the last several years.
Yep.
Cash,
yes.
So anyhow, we're happy about that we were able to fund our $6.5 million worth of
$6.1 million
worth of our part of the CLEF out of operating revenues and
positive budget variances
as well as the
so what does that mean for the taxpayer? What do you say?
No, we didn't have to go do
there's
a
no interest.
There's no increase in taxes.
No interest on payments.
There's no debt. We didn't borrow any money. We paid cash for the CLEF.
Wow. Okay.
And it's also important.
Thank you for helping me with this.
Well, and that's an important thing. That was a big project for our year.
That's huge.
And for the next year. So we started it's been the last 2 years that we started off on this project. And so it's been a big thing to be able to cash fund $6.1 million out of our previously being fiscally conservative. So
And I think that's good. And in the bottom, yeah, keep going.
Sorry.
Revenue, total revenues from governmental activities are anticipated to increase 1.4 million or 3% to 46 million above the 2018 budget. The increase in revenue is probably due to the following items. County's base property tax revenue, which funds governmental activities, is anticipated to increase 666,000 or 4.2% and is limited by this increase by the taxpayer bill of rights for Taber amendment. Sales tax from
all. So let's not leave that then. So did we have to increase our mill levy tax credit then?
It actually decreased. Because this is a non-reassessment year. Okay, so that was like, so we had about a 1% increase in assessed valuation, and we have a 4.2% increase in property taxes, so that net about 3% is what we decreased our credit by.
So, where does our Taber credit lie at this time?
We would see approximately a 6%. Before we'd have a decrease in property taxes, we'd see about a 6% decrease in assessed valuation.
Which means that we have approximately
before we use up all the credit.
Taber credits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fine. So
significant change in the residential assessment ratio.
Well, that's next year.
Right.
Okay, that's going along with the 2019 reassessment, and then that'll
2020 budget.
Yeah, and we're looking at, you know, depending on what numbers the assessor looks at. You know, there's a substantial increase in assessed valuation going on with residential property, so we're hoping that we're not going to be impacted by the Gallagher amendment.
Other than we may shrink the Taber credits closer to zero.
Maybe. I mean, it may not have an impact. I mean, right now, what Gary's saying with his increase is that...
So we're hoping the increase will be
offset the ratio.
The Gallagher adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll try to make clear for you.
You may not want to get into Gallagher on this particular.
I thought when I left, eight years ago, that they would correct the Taber Gallagher, and when I came back,
it's still
that didn't
happen. Oh, no, it's still worse now.
It's much worse.
Like, what the hell? Corrected this yet? Or?
Well, the constitutional amendment. So
I know, we can't change. I can't have
you have to go to a vote.
To go to a vote.
And so... Like Gallagher, I mean, for residential, there's a lot more residential property owners than the commercial property owners. So,
right.
If you're a residential property, why would you mean?
Yeah,
why
wouldn't vote to raise your taxes.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I'm just
getting more detail.
You're right. I'm glad you know about that. That's good.
That's
a whole
other
story for you.
Yes, I know.
Okay. Sales tax from all sources is anticipated to increase $497,000 or 7% based on 2018 actual collections. Modest growth experienced in the county's two largest revenue sources, property tax and sales tax, remains tentative given the continued degree of uncertainty in the economy. Personnel expenses for governmental activities are anticipated to increase $1.3 million or 6% to $23.7 million above the 2018 budget. The increase in personnel expenses is primarily due to the following items. Full-time equivalent units are anticipated to increase 0.07 or 0% to 240.57 from the prior year. The primary changes in FTE is follow. Human resources increased 1.0 FTE or 33% to 4.0 FTEs. A consultant was hired in March 2018 to perform an assessment of the Human Resources Department. The final recommendation of the consultant was to add an HR technician. The HR technician would be responsible for technical and administrative transaction tasks and serve as a backup for the administrative technician. This HR technician was funded by a reorganization of the HR department resulting from staff turnover. Cost of the HR technician is $58,000. Information technology increased one FTE or 11% to 10 FTEs. The addition of the system analyst position was justified by the significant increase in the complexity and quantity of IT infrastructure at the combined law enforcement facility and the reorganization of the facility management department transferring responsibility of the phone system, copiers, and printers to IT. Cost of the system analyst position is $83,000.
So are you done with personnel there?
Yeah. I got another FTE.
Okay, that's fine. We want to maybe do a little short analysis.
Okay. And then temporary enterprise resource planning, ERP software implementation FTEs decreased 2.22 FTEs. The financial and Payroll portion of the ERP inclusion has been primarily completed in 2018. The county department retained 2.44 temporary days in order to restore the timely completion of the various periodic financial statements, complete various remaining portions of the financial intent to plan the next phases of the ERP implementation. Reduction in temporary ERP position decreases cost by $159,000. You want me to stop there? Keep going?
Yeah, I think why don't you go ahead and finish your personnel.
Okay.
And then we'll do a short synopsis for Fran.
Okay. The following items were included in the 2018 budget in order to attract and retain quality employees and elected officials. Employee compensation plan includes a 3% across-the-board market adjustment, and eligible employees will receive an anniversary step. The compensation plan's cost is $690,000, or 4% above the prior year budget. In 2015, the state approved through legislation a change in the classification of the Routt County elected official compensation from a Category 3 to a Category 2, and also provided the boards of all counties across the state three options to increase the compensation of county elected officials. The legislation also provided for an annual increase for inflation. County elected officials have not had an increase in compensation since 2007. The compensation increase became effective primarily when the county elected officials are sworn in for a new term starting in 2017 and 2019. Compensation for one commissioner, treasurer, assessor, and the clerk increased $41,559, or 71%, to $100,059 each. The sheriff increased $45,037, or 59%, to $121,037. The coroner increased $27,901, or 84%, to $61,001, and the surveyor increased $2,773, or 84%, to $6,073. The total annual increase in elected official compensation and associated benefits, such as FICA, is $261,000. Health insurance increased $353,000, or 9%, to...
So let me interrupt for the benefit of the paper.
Okay.
The increases in compensation for elected officials are dictated by state statute.
Okay, and did those we were not... story on that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Okay.
And
correct. Yeah.
And the sheriff, too,
right? All of the elected officials, but that was not discretionary on the part of the county.
Right.
That
okay.
Just a change in class category.
That was
in essence state statute.
No,
yes. Was,
we had the option to go on to 1, 2, 3.
It was optional whether or not to join
to go up the
go up that classification.
Yeah, we had the option.
But nonetheless, ultimately, it is in state statute.
So once you decide to do that, it is in state statute.
Yeah, and then it has to be changed again by statute. Yeah.
Right.
So I think that might be a good time to stop here. So the bottom line, I think that we want to, you know, basically we're getting through the year here with a 0.07 increase of FTE, and that's, you know, I still think, and then, you know,
less than one
full-time.
Well,
correct.
It's almost it's basically nothing. Zero. It's 0.07 of an FTE, 0.07 of a person.
So in essence,
what we're able to do here, we're shuffling a few temporary people that we had into, there's two new full-time people that fill in some voids that we have in departments that are being, that need to have some help in those departments. And one of them is the information technology out at the new CLEF, as well as the Justice Center and just the area out there. And then the second one is improving our services to human services. And so those are coming.
Human resources.
Yes. Yeah, so then those are coming out of some decreases in some temporary people that we had that were helping us implementing our new accounting software. So to make to all of what Dan talked about, that's kind of the situation is that I think we need to talk about is the fact that we're doing all this with then basically zero FTE changes. And then yes, we're increasing. Our directive from the commissioners was that we were going to mirror our compensation pay increases with the Denver Boulder CPI, which has a new name, or there's a different CPI or something.
There's two different metrics that you average, right?
The legislative and the governor's estimates on CPI.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's anyhow that. So we raised the wages mm-hmm. by that CPI increase, and then also we're on step plan, and then we budgeted for the steps that were going to be running through the each of the departments that are still. Employees that are still eligible for steps. So now you can go into, I think we're into health insurance.
Are you okay?
Okay.
Health insurance increased $353,000 or 9% to $4.4 million to finance the county's partially self-insured medical plan over the 18 budget. The health insurance increase is based on a 17-year historical actual average increase of 9%. And data supplied by the county's health insurance consultant indicating 2019 medical claim costs are anticipated to increase 9%. The employer and employee contribution to the health insurance costs have both been increased by 9%. The goal is to fund the medical costs of county staff in a consistent and sustainable manner while continuing to offer a competitive health insurance benefit to employees. The compensation and health insurance increase for governmental activities are primarily being funded by the anticipated increase in property tax and sales tax.
Good.
Okay. Operating expenses for government activities increased $557,000 or 3% to $16.8 million above the 2018 budget. The primary changes in operating expenses is primarily due to the following items. The county has entered into a $30,000 agreement to conduct a business process review of the accounting, treasurer, and purchasing departments with the underlying goal of helping the county achieve high performance in financial management. The engagement will be approached from two independent perspectives. The first perspective is organizational efficiency. Is the county doing things right? The second perspective is strategic. Is the county doing the right thing? Key processes to be evaluated include but are not limited to procure to pay, contract management, project and grant accounting, financial reporting, capital asset tracking, budget preparation, and internal controls. The county has entered into a $70,000 engagement to establish a priority-based budgeting system. A $35,000 or 50% state grant was awarded in 2018 to partially fund the proprietary-based budgeting system. I'll just use the acronym. The PBB cost is anticipated to be $40,000 in 2018 and $30,000 in 2019. The PBB will enable the county to assess priorities in order to make sound long-term financial decisions. PBB will help the county assess their picture of fiscal health, objectively determine how to match available resources with community priorities, provide decision makers with clearly presented information that leads to better informed decisions, and meaningfully engage citizens in the budget process. The Human Resources Department budget included $65,000 for a consultant specializing in public sector HR solutions to deliver a job description study to rewrite, update all of the county's current job descriptions to reduce the total number of job descriptions when similar job descriptions can be combined together to create progressive career paths. For example, entry journey expert level position development. The new job descriptions can then be used by the county to do salary surveys more easily and effectively and to administer a classification and compensation program on an ongoing basis. The job classification was one of the recommendations from an outside consultant who completed the department's assessment in 2018. The human resources budget also included $18,700 for follow-up consulting services to help the HR department implement other recommendations from the 2018 assessment. In 2018, Brown County became partners with a communications firm in an effort to improve communications with the citizens and vendors of Brown County. A communications assessment and recommendations were completed as part of the process. A new county logo and brand was implemented along with staff training to improve and standardize communications internally and externally. Updates were made to the county's website, business cards, recruiting materials, and more. In addition, a standardized advertising agreement was established with the newspaper in 2019. Spending with the communications firm increases $18,000 from $32,000 to $50,000 or 44%. 2019 costs include $12,000 for strategy support of the items implemented in 2018, $8,500 for ongoing training, and $29,500 for implementation of new items, including the creation of a weekly newspaper advertisement, a monthly e-newsletter, management of an editorial calendar, and the creation of a central photography and videography site. Human Services, Family Preservation's operating expenses are anticipated to increase
$205,000 in 2019 over the 2018 budget. The change is due primarily to Rock County taking over the role of fiscal agent for the regional core contracts that provide mental health and substance abuse services to the five regional counties, which include Rout, Moffitt, Rio Blanco, Grand, and Jackson. Moffitt County has been the fiscal agent for this program in prior years. Regional core contracts are 100% funded through the state. The county has worked with the United States Forest Service to update their site management plan to include a co-location policy, which will allow private entities to place equipment at the Farwell Mountain site. When the site management plan is finalized, it will be the first step in improving internet coverage for the residents of North Route.
Carry on.
Capital infrastructure expenses for governmental activities increased almost $2 million or 22% to $10.9 million above the 2018 budget. The increase in capital and infrastructure expense is primarily due to the following items and is offset by projects completed in the previous year. Combined law enforcement facility, CLEF, is a cooperative effort between the City of Steamboat Springs and the county to expand police and sheriff administrative square footage. The county's portion of the 2019 CLEF budget is $4.0 million, and the total cost of the county's portion is $7.5 million. The county funded its portion of the CLEF with $0.9 million for the sale of land adjacent to the detention center to the city, $0.4 million or 40% of a $1 million state grant sponsored by the city, and the remaining $6.2 million from several years of favorable budget variances. The annual operating cost of the CLEF without replacement of capital is approximately $120,000. Construction of the CLEF started in 2018 and is anticipated to be completed in 2019. The E911 Communications Center is being relocated to the CLEF in order to provide additional E911 dispatch work areas and future expansion. Cost to relocate the E911 Communication Center is $1.1 million. The county and the state entered into an agreement where the state will become responsible for the future replacement of the E911 microwave system, which means the county is no longer responsible for setting aside funds for the future replacement of the microwave system, and also made available reserve balances to fund the relocation of the E911 Communication Center. The county will remain responsible for the tower, the building, and access to the building at each communication site. In addition, the city and the county entered into a cooperative agreement where the city is providing $450,000 to the county to relocate the city's Emerald Mountain communication site, and after approval by the state will also take over responsibility of replacing the microwave system, and the county will become responsible for the tower, building, and access to the building.
So we need to stop there for a second. So the E911 Communication Center was not originally envisioned to be part of the combined law enforcement facility, but as we started the design on the project, we recognized the opportunity that we had to move our emergency communications center from where it now exists in the lower level of the jail, in what is no longer a functional place for them to do business. So
the, I'm sorry, the new jail, old jail, what are we doing?
There's only one jail.
Existing jail.
The jail over in the town?
Yeah, the jail's out there by the,
right.
By the Justice
Center. Yes,
by the Justice Center. So we had our existing E911 communications center located in the lower level of the jail.
Okay.
In a very inadequate space.
Now where is it?
We're now going to be relooked. When we originally designed the CLEF, we recognized the opportunity and the timing. So the CLEF was enlarged by, I don't know how many square feet.
3,000
square feet, so that we're going to be able to relocate our emergency 911 communication center into the new building.
So that again has been funded out of our current out of reserves and monies that we had set aside in the rest. I mean, we again didn't borrow money to add on the construction of that 3,000 square foot, and it's in the 1.1 million is in addition to the 7.5 that we had going into the CLEF, so that we're basically, out of the last 2 years, funded $8.6 million of capital improvements out of operating.
And we recognize that the opportunity to relocate the E911 Communication Center into the new building would be far less expensive doing it now than if we waited and tried to build a separate building.
And or did a remodel or addition at a later time, yes.
Good. Two remote E911 communication dispatch stations have been included in the budget to provide for a fifth and sixth dispatch station in the CLEF E911 Communication Center. The two remote E911 dispatch stations will also function remotely in the mobile communication vehicle or anywhere an acceptable internet connection is available. The remote dispatch stations allow for additional dispatchers to dispatch during a major E911 incident, provide for continuity of operation as the CLEF E911 Communication Center is not available, and for potential growth in the department. The cost of the two remote E911 communication dispatch stations is $83,000. The county anticipates overlaying 5.6 miles of road for $850,000, chip and sealing 14 miles of road for $337,000, and replacement of the Green Trust Bridge on County Roads 67 for $861,000 as part of the road and bridge maintenance plan. The overlay and chip and seal project represent approximately 12% of the road and bridge paved road system. Business type activity.
Where's that trust bridge?
County Road 67.
Extreme southwestern Route County, off of the Williams Fork River.
Okay.
All the way over here.
Yikes. Okay. What's over there that inks the bridge? It's just
access to people's property.
And oil wells.
Yeah, there's a couple of oil wells there. The rest, so
on the wrong side of the river.
So it wasn't included in there, but we have a grant for that bridge too. So it's a, I think,
80-20.
80-20,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm also,
and that brings our bridges up to overall capacity of
sufficiency.
I think we got two.
Well, we got the Moon Hill
and Trout
to work on.
Yeah, that's about it.
And the Trout Creek Bridge, which is scheduled for next year, right?
It's out there. Like,
yeah, Moon Hill was actually right now scheduled for 2022.
Yeah.
Back to Trout Creek. The only one we have scheduled next year is the Green Trust Bridge.
And the weeds aren't
in the weeds. The Trout Creek Bridge is not going to be that expensive. I mean, we should be able to get out of that thing. But
so one thing I was going to note is, according to these numbers, we're doing overlays for $152,000 a mile, which is pretty good because we used to think $175 a mile.
So price
of oil is helping us out there.
Right. I mean, there's, let's just leave it at that,
Carry on.
Business type activities include the Yampa Valley Regional Airport, the Regional Building Department, the Pittsburgh Water and Sanitation System, and the Milner Sanitation System. Revenues are anticipated to increase 9.8 million, or 79%, to 22.1 million. Expenses are anticipated to increase 10.7 million, or 84%, to 23.4 million, and result in expenses over revenues of 1.3 million. After removing $524,000 of non-cash expenses such as depreciation, reserves decreased $775,000. The decrease in reserves is probably associated with the implementation of new land management software. The business type activities are fundamentally financially self-sufficient by charging fees for services and receiving grants. Revenues are anticipated to increase 9.8 million, or 79%, to 22.1 million from the 2018 budget. Yampa Valley Regional Airport federal revenues is budgeted to increase 2.3 million, or 46%, to 7.3 million above the 2018 budget. Federal revenue in 2019 of 7.4 million consists of.
Wait a second, that sentence didn't make any sense there. The federal revenue is budgeted to increase 7.249 above. So how do you have the 7.249 above the 2018 budget?
It's a 2.3 million above the 2018 budget.
Oh, okay, got it.
Federal revenue for 2019 of 7.4 million consists of Federal Aviation Administration Airport Improvement Program funding of 6.9.
So wait a second, I got another one there too.
Okay.
So you have on the first line right there, you have 7.249, and then the second one you have 7.429.
Yeah, it's all because of the airport.
There is a difference there. They're not a number transposition.
Oh. I'll check that.
I just have to see that. So.
Federal revenue for 2019 system. Yeah, it might be a transposition.
Anyhow, keep going.
Let's see here.
I wanted to make sure that everybody knows.
It almost is transposition.
Could be. Okay. Since the
we're not trying to embarrass you, Dan.
No, you're okay.
Just trying to clarify.
I'm fine. Okay.
Let's see. Consists of Federal Aviation Administration Airport Improvement Program funding of $6.9 million. The airport, the IP revenue funds, 90% of the cost of the construction of a budgeted $6.5 million terminal addition to relieve congestion and allow for additional airline development. And also fund a loader replacement of $0.5 million and apron fog seal of $0.6 million. Other federal revenue for 2019 include $340,000.
So let me interrupt. We're not really going to do that in 2019.
What's that?
A terminal addition.
It's budgeted right now.
It's planned, yeah.
We still have the grant application in. So.
Yeah, we have that. That's that special grant application?
Yeah.
I'm just
extra funds that the president put out there, $140 million or something.
But just realistically speaking, 12 months from now, we're not going to be cutting the ribbon on a new terminal extension
until 2020.
Oh, really?
But you think we might actually start construction in 2019? Seems unlikely, doesn't it?
It would seem unlikely, but
if that's the way,
there's some aspects of it that are internal.
Well, right now we budgeted it, and if it doesn't come through, it doesn't okay. come through.
All right. So. Sorry.
That's okay. Other federal revenues for 2019 include $340,000 in passenger facility charges, which typically provides 5% of the match on AIP projects. Budgeted federal revenue for 2019 is offset by 2018 federal capital projects. Yampa Valley Regional Airport, other revenues increased $7.6 million, or a lot of percent, to $7.6 million above the 2018. The fixed rate operator is anticipated to make $7.0 million in improvements in 2019. And this whole idea is based on generally accepted accounting principles, whereby we'll be capitalizing some of those assets that are improved upon by the FBO, which includes roads and buildings and parking areas and that kind of thing. And the idea there is that we have a lot of the leases are going to be 40 years in duration, 30 to 40 years, and which means is that, and then we typically own those pieces of property at the end of that lease. So that's why we're saying we're accounting for the general subject accounting principle side of this, and that's it's an accounting thing.
So we're not making the investment.
No,
the private firm is making the investment on a long term lease.
Okay, yeah.
But we have to capitalize.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk to Dad.
Yeah, okay.
That's fine. Personnel, total personnel for business type activities increased $104,000 or 3% to $3.9 million above the 2018 budget. The increase in personnel expenses is probably due to the following items. The following items were included in the 2019 budget in order to attract and retain quality employees. Employee compensation plan includes a 3% across the board market adjustment. And eligible employees will receive an anniversary step. The compensation plan's cost is $110,000 or 4% above the 2018 budget. Health insurance expense charged to business type activities that finance the county is partially self-insured. Medical plans increased $51,000 or 9% to $622,000 above the 2018 budget. Capital expense for business type activities increased $10.5 million or 185% to $16.1 million above the 2018 budget. The increase in capital and infrastructure expense is primarily due to the following items and is offset by projects completed in the previous year. Yampa Valley's Regional Airport Terminal expansion is anticipated to be $6.5 million and is funded with federal and state grants. Terminal expansion is being constructed to reduce congestion and allow for additional airline development. The terminal expansion is contingent upon the approval of federal and state grants. The YVRA fixed-base operator is anticipated to fund and make $7.0 million of improvements, and based on generally accepted accounting principles, some or all of the improvements will be capitalized by YVRA. The improvements include, but are not limited to, buildings, hangars, ramps, automobile parking, and roads. The Regional Building Department, Planning, Environmental Health, and Road and Bridge Departments are working with similar departments at the City of Steamboat Springs in a cooperative effort to implement new land management software. The focus is on customer service and quality to improve processes related to planning. Regional Building Department, Environmental Health, and Road and Bridge Departments. The county portion of the land management software implementation is anticipated costs. Approximately $600,000 for the Regional Building Department and $100,000 for the Planning, Environmental Health, and Road and Bridge Departments. The funding for the land management software will come from reserves. The land management software implementation is anticipated to start in 2019 and be available for the 2019 building season. That's good.
I think it's going to be 2020.
2020.
No,
2020. I said 2019. Yeah, I'm sorry.
And then we have this. I'm going to skip over to page 18.
Just so I just have a temporary correction for you.
On page, well, it's, not, it's a permanent correction.
Okay.
On the bottom of page six, for your record here,
yeah.
The building use tax.
Yep.
The bottom part of this sentence right here shouldn't probably be in there. That must have been a copy and paste error.
Unless
tilt is related to sales tax.
No, the reason why we're keeping it low is so that the building use tax budget has been projected conservatively given the uncertainty of building industry and certain federal revenues such as payment in lieu of taxes. So I've combined it.
So what? Okay, yeah.
You're underestimating the potential use tax in order to make up for the potential decrease in
right.
Tilt.
Okay, I can understand that. I didn't understand what you said. Okay, I got that.
Fine. That's what we were kind of running with.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
I got that.
We have clarity now.
Okay.
What page are we going to?
We're going to go page 18. This is a
graph.
Yeah, we'll wait till they get in.
You know, you can interrupt too anytime you want to ask questions too. So,
what page are we going to?
We're going to page 18.
And very important graph.
This graph here, it's basically showing our governmental activities committed reserves, so that's kind of our cash balances, if you will. And what we have there is you've got the red line, which represents road and bridge. You've got a blue line, which represents our equipment pool. And then you've got a yellow line, which represents our general fund. And what the equipment pools are is, okay, we're setting aside money for the future replacement of equipment out in the future, and the same thing like for a road and bridge. And you know, and this is what this is reflecting is how we anticipate reducing our reserves out into the future, and also to say whether or not we are, as a county, sustainable with what we have in our current, what we're trying to operate with currently as far as being able to replace road and bridge equipment, what have you, into the future and that kind of thing. So
it goes with our primary budgetary priority is to take care of what you have.
Right.
And so that's what this is. We fund a pool system that takes care of our road and bridge and our heavy equipments and buildings. Not the building themselves, but anyhow, that's the primary objective. And so that's what the pools are due. So
you suck away money to replace.
And we're looking ahead 20 years. And so while sometimes it's disturbing to see the graph take dips, typically it cycles through and recovers and dips and recovers. And what Dan is projecting are reserves in a way that they never fall below a certain point.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Well, I guess I take this opportunity once again, Dan, to thank you and your staff for putting this budget together every year. I think we recognize the challenges your department has faced over this last year, in particular with the implementation of the new ERP software. And trying to do that at the same time as putting together our regular budget. Thanks for the good work.
Thank you guys too.
Helping keep our heads above water.
I would agree with what Tim just said too, and again, I hope next year I would like to see us not be so lined up in the ERP and spend some face time with you guys and our department heads to go through, and you know, a little more live shot of all the department heads and spend some face time with our department heads going through their budget. And, you know, it's a priority for them and it's a priority for us. And so it needs to be a priority for us to see what they're doing and to be able to focus that back with them as well. So
hopefully
there's a lot of work that goes into this.
Hopefully there's a lot of stars aligning with the mostly full implementation of ERP, the priority-based budgeting. And,
yep.
And the GFOA assessment, all of those things coming together. You know, maybe not completely next year, but within a couple of years, much easier for us as commissioners to look at the budget and understand where things are going and coming from.
And I'm one of the, I like to see the nitty gritty.
I agree.
I like to see the dirt.
I've always appreciated Dan's complex expressions.
Dan's been here since. Well, what a shock!
Yeah.
Hey, you can't see the top, but see unless you see what's underneath it. So
you guys are ultimately responsible. So that's a good statement.
I like to see that. So.
So.
Okay. Anyhow, so if you have any questions, you can get a hold of Dan. Either Dan or Dan.
Dan and Pat Thomas's.
Okay, call me if you missed.
That sounds great.
Obviously, with all the effort that we had with the ERP, that I appreciate, you know, the headache that you went through with me.
You got there with buttons left there, man.
Anyway, I appreciate the extra effort that it just took just to try to keep up and catch up, actually.
We're not caught up yet, but. Yeah, but thank you.
I appreciate that from our staff, too.
Yeah, thank you. I'll tell the staff, too.
Okay, I think we're done.
Okay.